Thank you for the introduction. Bob and I are going to start. We're going to cover the challenges of incorporating functional ingredients into foods generally for its balance from an analytical perspective. So I'm going to start with a quick slide about our salad and then what's meant by functional ingredients. And I know today is very much about sport, but functional ingredients play a part there. A little bit more about the development brief and then some analytical considerations before moving into some case studies to help bring the issues to life. So I'm sure as most of you are aware, RSL provides science and technology services to the food industry. And one of the key areas is around functional foods and ingredients, hence why we're here today. And actually this year we're celebrating 25 years of science and service, so we're actually delighted to sponsor the pre-dinner drinks last night, so I hope you all enjoyed those. We've got something too bad today. So if we start with a definition of functional ingredients, within RSL we consider these as ingredients that provide some health benefit above and beyond fulfilling the basic nutrition need. So some health benefits. Now I know with the whole list of claims, you know, what's meant by claims, I'm not even going there. That's this afternoon. We've listed some of the things there, so vitamins, antioxidants, minerals, omega 3. Some products that have been launched, I'm not saying all of these are still on the market, but they're a good example of the breadth of different product matrices where functional ingredients are being added to products. So the first thing that we find is a challenge, and I'm sure within your own development teams is a challenge, is around the development brief. So understanding the first question about what is the product you're trying to develop. So we often ask sort of the W questions of what, where, when, and who. So for example, what is the product? Let's get some definition about the product. What functional ingredients are to be added? And is there sort of what claims do you want to make, and therefore how much do you need to add? But the other aspect is where will it be manufactured? So is it going to be manufactured in-house, and you know clearly what manufacturing process you're going to use? Or actually, if it's going to be contract manufactured, have you picked your contract manufacturer? It still amazes me how many clients come to us and say, well, we want this product, but actually we don't know where we're going to get it manufactured. And therefore, we're starting with a blank piece of paper of, well, what process do you want us to use? And therefore, almost, how are we going to know the ingredients are going to survive that process? So it's really trying to get as many facts before you start when you're doing development. Another aspect is, when is the product to be launched? And of course, everybody wants it yesterday, but that's a given. But it is trying to be realistic about how long developments take. And then, an example is the target retailer. Is the product going to be sold in the major multiples where it's probably going to be high throughput? Or is it going to be sold in the corner store or over the internet, which seems to be such a growing area at the moment? So again, trying to understand, make sure that any testing that is done reflects how the product is going to get to the final consumer through the process. So clearly, one of the key challenges is know what product you want, but more importantly, actually know what product you do not want. Because actually, if you can define what you don't want, that really helps the developer, because it's something that actually it is more defined and is clearer. So from a development perspective, some of the challenges when you get presented with your concept or the brief from whether it's marketing or a client that comes to you as a manufacturer, is actually scrutinise the original concept. Actually, is it achievable to make it? Often the challenges we get when we get a brief, you sort of think, actually, there's no way we're going to be able to get that amount of active ingredient into that small serving size of a drink or a product. So actually to challenge the requester at that point is a good option. The other aspects, I'm not going to go through each of these bullet points, is choice of ingredients. So if you want to add, for example, blueberry extract to a product, for example, cyanide content, how much do you want to actually add? Is it the actual amount of blueberry, or actually is it the amount of cyanide? And then make sure that you're sourcing the right ingredient to deliver the requirements that you need. Because, for example, blueberry extracts will have a difference from 10% to 60% anthocyanin content. So it is important to actually look at the ingredients that you're sourcing. The other sort of think about, right through to how you're going to incorporate the active and then the raw material think about splitting the ingredient, both as is, as it's provided, but then also when it's in the product. And then consider storage conditions, so where is the product going to be sold, and make sure that you're reflecting that. If there's any light-sensitive ingredients, consider putting in opaque packaging to protect the active ingredients. So I'm going to now hand over to Rob to tell you a bit more about why I analyse the product.
Okay, thank you, Jane. So whilst your developers are providing you with your new product, why do you need to get it analysed? So analysis can help you choose what ingredient or even supplier that you can use for your development. The raw material can be assessed for the levels present, the levels of the active, and also the quality of the ingredient. You can check for any degradation or if there's any impurities in that ingredient. And this will also allow you to check if your method is going to be suitable for use when you've actually incorporated this ingredient into your final product. You also need to check that what you're adding to your formulation is what you've actually got in your finished product through the whole of the development process. Analysis can help you confirm initial dosage levels and the levels of the ingredient throughout the key stages of the process. And it helps you determine if there's been any impact in any of these processing stages on the ingredient. It can also help you determine if you actually need to have an overage in your actual finished product. Analysis can provide you with the evidence to substantiate any legal claims, any label claims. Be careful about that one. Making sure that what you've got in your label claim is actually what you've got in your product. And again, stability of the ingredients in your product needs to be assessed over a period of time or the shelf life of the product to determine if there's been any deterioration or any losses of your active or ingredient. But there can also be situations where the product does not behave as predicted. So maybe, for example, the product might separate out, you might get light layers that are formed. And again, analysis can sometimes help you troubleshoot some of these issues and help identify some of the causes. And finally, once your product is launched, analysis will allow you to undertake any regular QC checks as part of your due diligence program. So, challenges for the analyst. So there's many challenges for the analyst, and it's not just about getting results out on time. It's actually the challenges related to the product or the ingredient itself. Sampling. Now, sampling of the product is just as important as the analysis itself. It's important to make sure that the sample is homogeneous or representative of the product before the analysis is carried out. So an example might be a cereal bar. You could freeze it with liquid nitrogen, grind it to a fine powder, or maybe freeze-dry it and macerate it. The stability of the ingredient or product needs to be considered. Is it prone to hydrolysis, oxidation, or maybe even microbial activity? And should it be frozen on receipt, or maybe kept out of the light? And if it's a short shelf-life product, such as milk, it might need to be tested straight away. Now, the method selected will depend on the active form. An example of this might be sterile esters. You might need to break down the sterile esters to free the actual component sterols during the analysis. Or the analysis might actually be required on the intact sterile ester. So appropriate methods need to be selected, and the method might vary according not just to the levels of the active, so you might have a method that's used suitable for trace levels versus a method that's required for high context of a particular active. But it may also vary, the method may also vary due to the matrix or the finished product type. Now in most cases the product will need to be extracted, so we'll free the active from the matrix and ideally remove or minimise any potential interferences. So for some particular product types, we might need to defat the system. Or we might actually need to break down the food product using a more vigorous procedure, something like an acid hydrolysis, or maybe something like a saponification. So the system we use then to analyse the active must be sensitive enough to actually pick up or detect the active in your extract. If not, you might need to include some sort of concentration stage, or maybe even consider an alternative method. And if the analysis is going to be routine, or if there's large numbers of samples, you need to look at how efficient your process is. How quick is the analysis? Can it be automated? Is it robust? Or when we mean robust, we mean are the results repeatable, and can any competent analyst carry out the test? So I'm just going to take you through a couple of case studies. I'm firstly going to talk about the omega-3 fatty acids. So I'm sure many of you are aware that there are many potential issues around the use of omega-3 fatty acids in food products. And probably one of the first challenges for the developer is selecting the source of the omega-3. It could be derived from algal, fish, or maybe a plant-derived oil. We also need to consider how we're going to get that oil into our food product, how we're going to incorporate it. It might be possible to directly incorporate an omega-3 oil in the product. And this is probably more likely in a high-fat or high-oil product. But for products that have got low-fat or got a high water content, things like juice drinks or milk, the incorporation can be more complicated because your omega-3 oil is not going to naturally mix with that type of product. And in these type of products, we can mix the omega-3 oil with emulsifiers to form an emulsion. This can sometimes be then incorporated into the product. Another alternative is to use omega-3 as being encapsulated. And this can sometimes be added directly to the formulation. Now, historically, one of the biggest issues with the incorporation of omega-3 fatty acids has been the sensory impact of the active ingredient. And this has been especially the problem historically with the fish oils. However, omega-3 ingredient suppliers have been working very hard over a number of years to make sure they minimise or mask these off-notes. And the omega-3 fatty acids are also prone to further deterioration through oxidation. Now, this can result not only in the reduction in the amount of omega-3, but can also generate off-flavours, off-notes, and this can end up making the product unpalatable or unacceptable to the consumer. Now, things like encapsulation of the omega-3 oils can help protect from this oxidation and help mask some of these off-notes. And again, this has solved some of the problems that have been arising historically. We can also use things like antioxidants, which can reduce the amount of oxidation. Now, flavour selection can have a huge impact on the final product characteristics. They maybe need to select flavours which fit better with the other ingredients in the formulation. We find clients often want an orange-flavoured product, but actually orange flavours can sometimes be oily or bitter and quite harsh, as compared to something like a tropical flavour, which can be sweeter and more juicy. Once you've selected that preferred flavour, you may need to evaluate other taste optimisation tools. You could consider manipulating the viscosity of the product through the use of stabilisers, or maybe evaluating alternative sweeteners to use. And some of these can help mask some of these off-notes. But one of the key aspects which is probably often overlooked is how the product is consumed. For example, if it's going to be incorporated in bread, can it be consumed as toast? Then what you need to make sure is you evaluate your product in all formats. So there's also several analytical challenges in the use of the omega-3 fatty acids. As I said before, first we need to consider the source of the omega-3. Now, omega-3 can, for example, be derived from plant sources, such as flaxseed oil, or animal sources, such as the fish oils. Now, plant oils mainly contain one particular omega-3 fatty acid, which is alpha-linolenic acid, in a mixture of other fatty acids, which fish oils, for example, have numerous omega-3 fatty acids mixed in with several other fatty acids. And again, this can complicate their identification and quantification. We also need to consider the component of interest. Now, omega-3 fatty acid generally refers to the fatty acid part of a bigger triglyceride molecule. And we often need to break down this triglyceride molecule to release the fatty acids for analysis. However, there are other sources of omega-3, such as krill oil is a good example, in which some of the omega-3 is actually incorporated in other molecules, such as phospholipids. Or we may have to consider using a different method for that type of product. So the level or dosage of omega-3 in food products also needs to be considered. And the levels can vary quite greatly. In some 4-5 products, the levels can actually be quite low as a proportion of the serving size. And in some products, the omega-3 are actually present naturally. And as we've already mentioned, omega-3 can be incorporated into food product in several ways, depending on the food matrix. It could be incorporated as the oil, as an emulsion, or encapsulation. Now, the oils can generally be fairly readily extracted from a food matrix. And the use of emulsifiers or encapsulated omega-3, then this can have benefits in terms of us allowing us to incorporate the omega-3 to a food product, and it makes the developer's life a little bit easier. But these can often interfere with the extraction of omega-3, actually making the analyst's job more difficult. So stability, as already highlighted, stability of omega-3 is a challenge for the developer, but it's also a big challenge for the analyst. The oxidation of omega-3 fatty acids can be a problem, and we need to take measures to minimise its oxidation throughout the analysis. So I just wanted to briefly take you through, the outline of the omega-3, common omega-3 methods, and just to highlight some of the things we need to consider. So as I mentioned, sampling. Now this can be quite often very simple, just a careful mixing or shaking or homogenization using blenders. However, oils in a non-fatty food can be actually prone to separation, so you can actually get a layer of this oil separating out. Likewise, the emulsions or the encapsulation can break down again to get this layer of oil. Now this is something that also needs to be considered when taking samples to actually send to the lab for the analysis. Is the sample representative of the product? Has there been any settling, any sediment, or any fine layers formed? And it's also something to consider when actually transporting the sample to the lab. So once we have a representative sample, we often need to carry out an extraction of the product. The omega-3 oil generally have to be isolated or extracted from the food, because there's likely to be other components in that food that are going to interfere with the analysis. So generally the food matrix and the emulsion and the encapsulation have to be broken down to release the omega-3. And this in itself can be an issue, as I already mentioned, omega-3s are prone to oxidation, and there's measures that need to be taken to minimise this, such as reducing exposure to high temperatures or minimising aeration. We can use things like nitrogen purging, for example. So it's quite often a balance between using harsh enough conditions to actually get the omega-3 out of our product, but gentle enough conditions to make sure we don't promote any oxidation. So once we manage to isolate and concentrate the fatty material, we'll need it to convert it into a form that we can readily analyse. And again, we still need to take care in terms of not promoting any oxidation or degradation. So these derivatized fatty acids are usually analysed using techniques such as gas chromatography or high-performance liquid chromatography, HPLC. Most commonly, GC methods or gas chromatography methods are used, because these methods are usually sensitive enough to detect the analyte, but also selective enough to allow us to separate all the component fatty acids so we can pinpoint which are the omega-3 fatty acids so we can identify and then quantify them. So I'd just like to move on to another case study, which is the broad area of the botanicals. So one of the key questions from a development and an analytical point of view is, what claim are you making in the product? Is it on the botanical itself, or is it on the active? Now each botanical has a number of actives which are responsible for their functionality. For example, in green tea you've got the catechins. So the question is the claim being made on the active, or is it on the amount of plant extract? Well, we need to be very clear about what claim you want to make. And I've just highlighted a few botanicals and plant extracts and some of the actives that you'll find with those in the slide here. I'm not going to go through each of those. Now, so for some of these plant extracts, we can use marker compounds to quantify the levels of the extract in the finished product. The analytical test can often measure the amount of active or this marker compound. So we'll need to measure these in the extract raw material and the finished product to be able to then calculate the level of this extract in our finished product. So when we're investigating how to analyse a particular extract or active, first you need to check, is there a validated analytical method already out there? Or are there suitable markers that we can use to quantify the level of the extract? Now these marker compounds will need to be unique to make sure there's no interferences from other sources. I suppose an example of this is ellagic acid, which is a good marker for pomegranate, but it's also common to a number of other fruits. So in your product formulation, you have to take into account, are there other fruit products present, which could then interfere with the quantification. So also while looking at a mixture of botanicals, bear in mind that the actives of each of these botanicals might actually be the same. An example of this would be, it's not a very good idea probably to use catechins as a marker for tea if it's in a chocolate-based product. Again, the markers would be similar in both. So it's always a good idea to discuss with the analyst or the laboratory the form of the ingredient and the finished product itself, because quite often there's several methods that can potentially be used. For example, we carry out measurement using a spectrometer or using high-performance liquid chromatography. But it doesn't mean we'll necessarily get the same results using those methods. For example, for spectrometry, can be more prone to interferences from other components in the matrix. We also need to consider that a method might work perfectly well for our raw material ingredient, but it might not necessarily work in the finished product. It could be other interferences, or the actual level of the extract might be very different in our finished product compared to the raw material. So as highlighted for the omega-3, the details of the ingredient or finished product can often dictate what extraction is required and what type of extraction. And again, things like encapsulation can complicate this. Again, if we're looking for a mixture of botanicals in our finished product, we also need to consider, are they going to be stable in this mixture? Can one botanical, for example, promote degradation or oxidation, for example, of another botanical? We also need to consider the form of the ingredient. For example, lutein can be problematic because it can exist in the ester form and as the free form. So it's important to check which of these forms are actually going to be present in the product. Again, stability always needs to be considered. For example, ginseng is not very stable in acid drinks or to heat processing. So from a developer point of view, you may want to consider different formats or different processing options. So just following on from the stability thing, just wanted to highlight some analysis that was carried out using HPLC, high-performance liquid chromatography. All we've done here is use that technique to monitor the stability of an active over time. Now the HPLC generates each of these three chromatograms, and what we've done generated these over time. And as you can see, the peak, which indicates our component of interest, as you can see, over time, that peak is actually reduced over time, which indicates there's been some deterioration or oxidation of our product over time. So potentially, we might, in this particular situation, we potentially have to carry out some reformulation work, which again, I'm sure is going to create more challenges for the developer. And again, it's pretty much guaranteed the solution is probably going to give more headaches to the analyst. So just to finish off, I'm going to hand back to James to highlight some of the considerations that we need to think about to get the most from the developer and the analyst.
Okay, so hopefully that's giving you a taste of it. There's lots to consider to ensure a successful product launch. I guess in summary, to get the most out of your NPD team, one of the key things is to make sure the development brief is very specific and achievable, and then you will have a successful product. One of the key aspects to consider is making sure to incorporate the correct amount of ingredient to make any claim, so doing the right amount of research on what ingredient, what amount you want to be added, and how much actually is contained within the ingredient. And actually start the analytical validation and checking at the earliest point possible. We find that so many clients within the industry do all the development, do some stability testing, and almost don't do the analysis right at the end point. And actually, they suddenly find actually we haven't got any active gift in the product, so we can't actually launch the product. So, the earlier you start the analytical process, it gets you to the end point quicker. And actually, what we found recently is more and more companies are actually using analysis to help them choose which active or which supplier to use when they're choosing which ingredient supplier to use for the product. So, making sure that actually the active they think they're getting is present in the ingredient they're buying. And then get the most from your analytical results, again, consult at an early stage, it really reaps rewards. Apart from anything, check the method available, because if there's no method available for the ingredient you're hoping to make or the claim you're hoping to make, actually method development itself can take some time. So that may take a month or 2 months to develop a robust method that's fully validated and therefore gives you results that you can test and check. But also think about the sample that you're sending for analysis, so making sure it's homogeneous. Is it representative of the rest of the batch that you've prepared? Because that's one of the key issues. You find that, I've just sent you this sample, but actually the rest of the batch was totally different. Well, the results are then numerous. And the more you can tell the analysts around your manufacturing process, and and the problems to the other ingredients that are present, we can then check that the method being used is the right method, and that actually, you know, we can understand will that ingredient be stable through that process. So one of the key aspects is to make sure that your expectations of what you require in terms of results and the ability of the partner organisation are matched. And in terms of future challenges, well, probably the second one is the biggest one that's going to affect us in the next few months, and I shall leave that to the afternoon session, really. But, you know, from an analytical and development perspective, it's really driven by, from a legislation perspective, as to how much active needs to be able to product to make what claims that needs to be wanted on your product. And then all the rest follows on those, but we need to make sure we've got the appropriate methods that can then make those claims. So that's it. Quick overview. Thank you.